And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yep. It's time to talk to James Bovard. And there's he's always got something good to say and something back in history. And one of the guys that's old guard, been around. I remember that. What does he remember? William Barr's connection to Ruby Ridge, defending FBI snipers, and who is he, and what's Trump doing, and he's going to beat something. But you know what? We're just not going to let him just get away with every little thing. And then we got some other stuff to talk about, but I want to hit that one first with James Bovard, author of 10 books, including Public Policy Hooligan, Attention Deficit Democracy, and a bunch of others. Lost Rights was the one that really got me. But it is James Bovard, our good friend. Mr. Bovard, where would they go to find all your goodies? What website they need to do?
Well, thanks, Ernie. Thanks for having me on. There's a James Bovard page on Amazon. They get a bunch of books there. JimBovard.com. And of course, there is the photos at the local post office.
Bovard, JimBovard.com, just like it sounds. All right. James has been documenting and detailing it's bad out there on so many levels. And if you were reading his books from the 90s, man, you knew here we freaking go. And Lost Rights has been a very good primer for you got some liberal. No, it's not that really. Really? Here, read this book and then come talk to me. And it had a big impact on Air America affiliate here in Arizona. The general manager there, Charles Goyette, and I were just, he's always on our butt, you damn libertarians. After he read your book, boom, he was cured.
That's great. Well, thanks for giving the book. I appreciate that.
Well, tell me, William Barr, give me all the William. Why is he in the news of late? What's going on?
Well, William Barr is Bush's, Trump's nominee to be attorney general to take the place of the brilliant Jeff Sessions. Barr was attorney general back under George H.W. Bush, the first Bush, and he was attorney general during Ruby Ridge. And I was looking at his, when someone's nominated for a top post, the Senate Judiciary Committee sends him this questionnaire, tell us about what you've done, so on and so forth. And one thing that jumped out to me was that Barr's biggest pro bono effort after he left office as attorney general, Barr's biggest effort was to help Lon Horiuchi, the FBI sniper who killed Vicki Weaver as she stood in her cabin door in 1992. Barr got other former attorney generals to sign a brief standing up for basically absolute immunity for FBI snipers who kill Americans. It's a very dangerous doctrine, and it's kind of unusual for someone to do pro bono work for someone that worked basically under them and then killed an innocent person. But this is how Washington works. This is how high ideals are defined inside the Beltway.
Okay, now wait. They have a questionnaire. They go to him and they say, give us some of your bona fides. Hey, man. That was a Lon Horiuchi defender and kind of kicked ass. Make me attorney general? I mean, that's what he's saying?
That wasn't what he said in, noun verb English.
Well, I mean, no, he emphasized in that questionnaire that he did that, right?
Right, true. I mean,
damn.
It's something which, Right. This is something which the press corps did not pick up on, but having written a lot about Ruby Ridge back in the 1990s, and having been denounced by FBI Chief Louis Free for what I wrote, I was attentive. I said, "Oh, Lon Horiuchi. Oh, this is going to be good." So, and it was, and it's just, it's fascinating to see the kind of moral principles which a nominee for what, you know, one of the most powerful jobs in the nation would have, and it did. This is not something which has raised any problems for him on Capitol Hill or in the media. The folks at Gun Owners of America picked up on my article and been trying to raise a ruckus with it, but I don't think it's really gotten that much traction. But you know, this is how it works.
It is. And we're getting into there's going to be another wave of crap coming. And
no, you think so?
I just feel it. You know, I mean, of course we feel it. But this kind of doctrine, when you talk about doctrine, this is an attorney general gets a bunch of other state attorney generals, go, yeah, and FBI snipers don't get prosecuted, therefore doctrine, therefore judges say it's okay, therefore. What the hell does that even mean?
It's as far as what it means, that's up to a federal judge or a state judge to say. It was interesting. There was a lot of controversy around that Ruby Ridge case. As it bounced around federal court, there was a Boundary County, Idaho, tried to prosecute Lon Horiuchi, but the feds jumped in and said, well, the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution prohibits state and local governments from prosecuting federal agents, even if they kill local residents. And there was, you know, there were a few judges who were really great on this. Alex Kaczynski was superb. He was in a 2000 dissent on this case. Kaczynski warned that this is a case that would create a new James Bond 007 standard for the use of deadly force against American citizens.
License to kill.
Yep, this is a Ninth Circuit case. A lot of back and forth on that. The following year, the court flipped on that. This time, Kaczynski wrote for the majority. He said a group of FBI agents formulated rules of engagement that permitted their colleagues to hide in the bushes and gun down men who posed no immediate threat. Such wartime rules are patently unconstitutional for police action. And that was the same thing which a Justice Department internal report, a confidential report, which I eventually got hold of in 1994, said that the rule of engagement at Ruby Ridge contravened the U.S. Constitution, because as one of the snipers, FBI snipers, said, the rule was basically, if you see them, shoot them. So because the rule was that they were entitled to kill without warning any adult who had a weapon. And thanks to the FBI surveillance, the FBI knew that the Weavers always had weapons if they stepped out of the cabin. I mean, this is bear country up there. Plus, you got a lot of U.S. Marshals hiding in the bushes.
Yeah, but they wound up sniping his wife that was holding a baby, not a gun.
Well, that's true, but it's close enough for government work.
Yeah. So then Lon Horiuchi, didn't he go on to Waco and start laying waste there, too?
He was at Waco. Not exactly sure what he did there. I mean, for some reason,
he was getting coffee for people.
If you believe the FBI, that's the right answer. So, yeah, there's a lot of things we haven't found out about Waco. So, and that's one of them.
Yeah, that's what the bulldozers are for. This was our, as young activists, this was our 9/11. And, you know, for the older generation, they had JFK, you know, and a lot of other stuff. I mean, there's like 15 gazillion of these. Look into your crystal ball, James. Where's this all lead? Oh, right as we go into break. So he has time to think about the answer to that. This is going somewhere. You know, the books that he's written on different administrations. Oh, you did the Clinton thing. You must be on the right. Well, then he bashes on the Bush betrayal and goes on Bush. Well, you must be on the left. You know, how about I be on the truth? You know, the truth, the side of truth. You know, that libertarian freedom anarchist leave me aloneism. How about that? Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
Is spreading.
James, how are you?
Doing good, Ernie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, you're always doing, you know, good work. We got to make sure we pimp. You know, this is, you know, one of the things that we're doing, we've been really working on it as an aside on, you know, the deplatforming, and we kind of, you know, skated it because we went dark on all our social media. And then now here we are, and we go, I don't even want to be there anymore. But we go, hello, we're here to say, yeah, we're over there. And we got a bunch of over there's that we're looking and evaluating. And I go to Narcopoco in a couple weeks and kind of picking the brain of a lot of the minds there to see where that might be. Now, we got a lot of places that we're doing and so on, but I really want to focus on the decentralization of data, and I don't have to move ever again for never, and it all kinds of stuff I'll tell you about later. But where are you going? How are you using the net? What is your web page? Counting on USA Today to drive traffic? What are you doing?
Lots of different things. I'm pretty active on Twitter. I found it useful. There's, you know, I basically accept, okay, there's a code of speech there, which is bullshit, and it's completely biased against conservatives and people who are anti-government. But, you know, okay, this is how life works right now. Just kind of wheeling and dealing. Sometimes I get some good kick out of Facebook, a lot of reposts there. Zero Hedge reposts some of my stuff. That's very helpful. You know, just wheeling and dealing and seeing what works. So, and it's a constant process of adjustment. It's frustrating. But I survive.
This is exactly what I didn't want to. I could see the big purge coming. You knew it was going to happen right after the Lovelution. There is no way in hell they were going to get blindsided like that again. They were like, hell no. Then, you know, Trump and Brexit going through, and they're like, man, we got to turn that big dial some more. God dang it. You know, so now we got Google and YouTube changing the algorithm so that, you know, and this is their statement, so that flat earthers and 9/11 deniers are pushed down like they're the same thing, you know? So I'm going, oh, these guys, it's never going to stop. So we have the ability now, the technology that I've been following on this stuff allows for guys just like you to be able to be platformed everywhere and it forever and always and can never go away from seeded files on these IPFS servers and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you about it later. But the you're one of the guys that I'm thinking of. It's like James Corbett, myself, Luke Radowski, Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. We're all going in on this effort to have forever servers of it's always available and never goes away kind of crap. So I want to include you in that, and I'll tell you about it in a next break. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back with James Bovard. This is, you know, he's one of the guys I think of when a lot of things come up because it's been over before even the internet was a thing. I mean, hey, James, I got my first email account. You got one? You know, I mean, when did you get your first email account?
Oh, probably 94, 95.
Yeah, I think my first one was 93, I think. You know, we had somebody got it for me. It was in the Ross Perot guy. He was, you know, big guy. He goes, man, you got it. So we had safe at indirect.com. You know, Second Amendment's for everyone thing. I was the first one that we got. And three of us shared it, you know, at the office. We were just like, yeah, okay, we'll just make sure you put your name up top. I don't want to have associated with your crap, you know. And then later it became a thing because one of those guys was part of the Viper Militia. So, so the NBC affiliate calls me down, wants to interview me, like, yeah, we're just getting delivered there. Just say anything, you know, we'll catch them in a lie. And, of course, you know, every time I go on these different things like this, there's an FBI agent there.
No. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
I am shocked. You know, I am shocked.
Channel 5, an independent, you know, television station here at the time. Now they're CBS, but they had FBI. It's all like the FBI is interviewing you, but it's a reporter. That's how they work with them. And I, of course, you know, I'm going, what do you know about this? Like, I go, yeah. Yeah, we shared this account with him, but he put his name, he called himself Soup Boy, you know, because he was always poor and always ordered soup, so they called him Soup Boy. But so I insisted, I go, look, if you're going to be posting using this account, put your name at the top and you say whatever, I don't care. So we were using this, just kind of checking it out. Well, they want it, because they want to catch you in a lie. That's one thing I learned. You either say no comment, nothing, or you just tell them the truth. Yeah, what are you going to do about it, you know? And this has been... From early on, I could see the tech. They could go back in any and everything that you ever wrote. And we learned this from early 90s. So now people, they think they're private, secret, or you shouldn't. When my kids started doing MySpace, I'm going, you know, there's some agents going, thank you for all this, right? And so what is your view of the future of the internet? You're just open with everything. You're looking for private communication. Do you encrypt? I mean, how do you operate?
Those are good questions. I mean, some of them I'm happy to answer on air, others I'm not. it's a very good point which you make that folks need to assume if they're putting something online that it's going to be, it could turn up on their dossier. It's too bad Roger Stone didn't take your advice. You should have been his counselor. But
what a moron for even talking to them. He had to have an alternative plan or something. I have no idea what his deal is.
I agree. I mean, I don't know what his game is. He's a very unusual guy. So, but no, it's a very good point which you make about how people should always be wary, and especially if they're talking to an FBI agent, because the thing we've seen from the Mueller investigation is it's turned into a truth commission. And okay, so they haven't proved the Russians had a big tie to the election, but they've talked to all these people and they say this and that one and the other one lied. Well, with the way the FBI does it, what the FBI normally does is not, it doesn't make a tape recording of an interview. Instead, you have an FBI agent who talks to you, then later on he sits down and writes up a memo. And if there's not any tape recording, it's his word against yours as far as whether or not you made a false statement. And so this is a huge legal peril. I've written about that for USA Today and The Hill and some other places. But it's sad to see there's still so many people so naive who think that since they haven't done anything wrong, they have nothing to hide. But if you sit and talk with someone for hours and they ask you repeated questions about something in your past, and there is even a slight variation in your answers, is possible for them to accuse you of lying. I mean, there are some guys, that's something which might resonate for people from long discussions with their ex-spouses.
well, I tell you who learned, we got this from was, remember, Leona Helmsley and Martha Stewart and a lot of these people.
Yeah, you know, Martha Stewart, good case.
You know, she...
Bad case, but a good example.
I think she handled it well, though. She just like, all right, fine, whatever. Let's serve the time. Let's do it. Get it over with. I'm going to come out. You guys, I learned my lesson. You guys can suck. You done messed with the wrong person. So I don't know how that certainly was a lesson for a lot of people that, you know, don't get the lesson.
Yeah, but it's something which should have been a lesson. It wasn't because most people didn't pay attention to that. And most people simply accepted the government's charges and the Martha Stewart plea bargain. I think she pled guilty, didn't she, to lying?
Yeah, no, she's like, yep, done. I'm going to drag this out. It'll affect stock price. Dude, I'll just take my medicine. Lesson learned. I don't talk to cops anymore. You dumb. I slap myself. I should do a couple of years for being stupid. You know, I don't know how. What did she do, like 9 months or something? I don't know how long she did. It wasn't like forever, but she had to, you know,